Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program, very remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, May 20, 2021. South Sudan's National Security Service parade men suspected of being behind road ambushes and kidnapping in and around the capital, Juba.
So we would encourage the National Security Service to continue with this, and of course other government institutions to pursue and apprehend those involved in these criminal activities.
And Amnesty International is asking the government of Sudan to implement security reforms.
The situation has been a combination of use of excessive force, use of lethal force, in apparent violation of Sudan's international obligation and the international human rights law.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan National Security Service says 12 people suspected of abducting, torturing, and killing people along highways linking the capital, Juba, were detained this week during a joint operation by security agencies. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
National Security Service spokesperson John Kumuri says insecurity caused by criminals along South Sudan highways has hindered the movement of goods and services to areas of need within the country. As he paraded the 12 suspects before reporters at National Security Service headquarters in Juba yesterday, Kumuri said the suspects will be investigated and tried in a court of law.
During their active illicit operations, the group has been indulging in hijacking of vehicles at guns point, abduction of both South Sudanese foreign nationals, primarily with the intention of extorting money in form of ransom, torturing, mining, and to some extent executing killings of relatives of the captives of the hostage.
Kumuri did not allow reporters to speak to the suspects, despite repeated requests by journalists to do so. Kumuri says the suspects carried out their criminal activities along the Juba-Nimule Highway, Juba-Yei Road, and the Juba-Terkeka Road. Some of those arrested had their photos published in the Juba Monitor newspaper 2 weeks ago, accompanied by a plea from the police asking the public to provide information leading to their arrest and offering a 2 million South Sudanese pound reward to anyone providing credible information leading to the arrest of the suspects. Kumuri says recently the group abducted several travelers, including 7 South Sudanese and 2 Ugandans along Juba-Terkeka Road. After conducting intensified tracing and rescue operations, Kumuri says 9 abductees were rescued and reunited with their families.
Of recent incidences, it is called into action case in which 3 South Sudanese and an Ethiopian national were kidnapped while traveling from Terkeka to Juba. The abductors, after having received lavishly demanded ransom from the relatives of the 3 South Sudanese, set them free while the Ethiopian is feared executed after his ransom charges were not received on time. Up to now, we don't know this Ethiopian man, where he was buried or if he's alive, nobody knows.
In a separate incident along the Juba-Nimule Highway, the suspects abducted a Somali man and demanded a ransom of $60,000 be sent to them via a mobile money transfer service, according to Kumuri. He says the money was paid electronically, but the mobile network operator blocked the transfer, prompting the perpetrators to threaten to kill the abductee. Kumuri says the man's relatives decided to hand over the money to the abductor's representative, who security officers later arrested. Kumuri says National Security Service officers exhumed the bodies of some abductees buried by the abductors. Rajab Mohandis, executive director for the Organization for Responsive Governance, says rampant insecurity along the highways has caused fear among the public and has negatively affected the economy and people's livelihoods.
It gives people fear, especially if there is nothing happening about these issues and no clear actions being taken by government to address these issues. So we would encourage the National Security Service to continue with this, and of course other government institutions to apprehend, to pursue and apprehend those involved in these criminal activities.
Mohandis says the recent threat of abductions and kidnappings is something that was unheard of in the past. He says the problem is directly linked to the deteriorating economy and the lack of service delivery. He says security agencies must ensure that criminals are punished according to the law.
That would be one way to begin addressing this. But so long as people find this thing economically beneficial to them and they are desperate without jobs and poverty is looming and they see their family members suffering and they can't provide for their family members, they will always pursue livelihoods in these different ways. So, yes, there is a responsibility for the government to ensure that more is done.
Mohandis says the overall solution is to fully implement the revitalized peace agreement, which would address some of the problems that have led to more insecurity, abductions and kidnappings in the country. For VOA News, Amwake Simon Wudu in Juba.
A police official in Mundri West County of Western Equatoria State says one person was killed and 13 others sustained injuries during a road accident at Bangolo area this morning. For VOA News, Siba Martin Murangi has more from Mundri.
Major Abraham Tong Kurmuk, head of traffic police in Mundri West County, says a Land Cruiser which was escorting an ambulance transporting a dead body fell into a river early this morning.
It fell into River Kare, injuring 13 people, and one woman of 58 years died instantly by the names of Esther Pia Clement. The number of the car was 035 Ghost. Six people who were injured terribly are being taken to Lui, and seven others have been taken to Mundri West County Hospital.
Tong says six people who sustained severe injuries were rushed to Lui Hospital, while seven others were transported to Mundri West County Hospital. Richard Dorka, one of the passengers who suffered a deep cut on the head and a broken arm from the accident, is receiving treatment at Lui Hospital. Dorka says the bridge at Kar River where the accident occurred is partially covered in water, citing that the brake had cut and the driver lost control.
What we cannot do as human beings, God is able. There are a lot of challenges in the world. The bridge of Kar is in such a slopy area, so the brake had cut and the driver lost control.
Dr. Lex on Friday from the surgical department of Lui Hospital says the injured are in stable condition.
All the accident patients were a bit okay. Six people are here with us in Lui and seven were taken to Mundri where one died.
Dr. Lexon says all six are expected to make a full recovery. For VOA News, I'm Sebo Martin Murangi in Mundri.
From Mundri in Western Equatoria, we move to Jonglei State, where a row is brewing between the deputy governor of the state and some members of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement after some party members sent a petition to President Salva Kiir asking him to fire the deputy governor. The deputy police commissioner in Jonglei says his office has detained individuals who forged signatures on the petition. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
The trouble started when some SPLM members accused Jonglei Deputy Governor Antipas Nyokucha of causing divisions among the state party members and subsequently asked President Kiir to fire Kucha. SPLM party member Samuel Atenyepech says some of the names on the petition were poached. He filed a complaint with the police accusing three party members of defaming him by including his name in the petition without his permission.
Those who accused me and put my name in the list of the people who signed a petition against the deputy governor and the chairperson of the SPLM in Jonglei State, and for these things, they put my signature and they put my name without my knowing. As a result, I feel unhappy, and I seek for the legal approach for them to apprehend them. In fact, I found three suspects that I had evidence they are the one who wrote the petition.
Following pitch complaints, police arrested three party members on Tuesday. 35 other SPLM officials involved in the petition went to the police station and surrendered themselves to the authorities Tuesday. All 38 SPLM officials were bailed out on Wednesday. Former Bor County Commissioner Isaac Mamir Rook says Deputy Governor Kucha ordered the arrest of the 38 officials because he was outraged by the petition presented to President Kiir.
There is a list of 38 people in police. The list was submitted by Deputy Governor to Deputy Police Commissioner that whoever in this list must be called to police and must be arrested and must be investigated. So our arrest was coming from the office of Deputy Governor. It is something obvious. Somebody behind our arrest is Deputy Governor Yong Kucha, because he said that he went to discipline us. And it is a surprise to me to hear such a statement from the leader. How can you discipline your colleagues? And how can you discipline people you are ruling? We are SPLM members, we are citizens of this state, and we are citizens of South Sudan. And we are politicians at the same time. Attorney just a cover.
Rook says he and several other politicians are victims of the political wrangling that is playing out within the SPLM secretariat in Bor. Deputy Governor Kucha denies he ordered anyone be arrested in connection with the petition.
This is a mere lie. There's nothing like that. First of all, there are not 38 people arrested. People who were arrested are only three, and it is the individual by the name of any place who arrested them. Because these people, they wrote a petition and include the name of Aten, and even forged the signature. So I have no connection with the arrest.
Jonglei State Deputy Police Commissioner Brigadier General Chola Changding says police arrested only three individuals who were accused of defamation by pushing a signature on a document without their consent. He says the police at this point are investigating only three suspects involved in the case.
The arrest warrant carries only three names, that are Mamir Rook, Deng Ajak and Anyet, known as Jamus. They were arrested and put into the cell for investigation. The rest who reported to the police, you know, these people put themselves in problem, which is not theirs. The complainant is someone by the name Ateng Fech, who accused only the three for putting his name under a petition to the president without consulting him.
Kucha says he is conducting his own investigation to determine the true signatories of the petition to the president.
The paper is there, but we want to find out who are the people who wrote the paper. Maybe if the people arrested by attempt are confirmed to be the owners of the paper, this way now you come and make reaction. But you don't make reaction when you don't know who wrote the paper.
Gabriel Deng Ajak, the former Jonglei Relief and Rehabilitation Commission director, who was also arrested, says the SPLM's members' arrest was politically motivated.
We never defame anybody, and this all was just cooked. The history of defamation was cooked, and was cooked midnight, the day we were arrested. And the police commissioner, I appreciate the acting police commissioner, Brigadier General Chola Chek, who briefed us in details on who arrested us, and that is Antipas Nyok. And after he make sure he locked us in, he informed us that he's going to Antipas Nyok to brief him on our detention, in order to assure him that we are all arrested.
Late last month, more than 30 SPLM members, the majority of whom were former constitutional post holders, petitioned President Kiir, urging him to remove the deputy governor, accusing him of inciting hatred and division amongst party members. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, how is Sudan handling COVID deaths at hospitals? That story is lined up after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best way to introduce change?
You have to educate. Education is the key factor to change. Without education, people will resist.
You have to educate the person. You have to educate people on the situation on ground, the implication of that situation, and if the change is to come in, what impact is that change going to create?
So the best way to introduce change is to understand the change, and you try to educate the people on what change is all about.
I think just go right ahead and do it, because there are always people who don't really like change, and there are also always people who like change and they're conducive to change. And so I think there's always going to be that one person who's like, no, I don't like this, it's different.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Malawi has banned more than 19,000 doses of AstraZeneca coronavirus vaccine after slow uptake led to their expiration. Malawian authorities are struggling to administer remaining doses set to expire in June and are training mobile health workers to visit and inoculate communities. For VOA News, Lamek Masina reports from Lilongwe.
The public installation of the vaccine Wednesday in the capital was held in front of officials from the Treasury, Anti-Corruption Bureau, the Auditor General's Office, and health rights activists. Speaking during the event at Gamuzu Central Hospital, Health Minister Khumbize Kandodo Chiponda said the distraction was aimed to build public confidence in the safety of the vaccination program.
It has been very difficult, you know, to convince Malawians about the vaccine initially because of a lot of misinformation, disinformation, and the negative propaganda. So we just want to assure Malawians that indeed what we had said, that we are going to destroy them, it is happening now.
Kandodo Chiponda said the move is also in line with government policy, which prohibits the use of any expired health commodities. The expired vaccines were part of 102,000 vaccines Malawi received from the African Union on March 26, with an expiration date of April 13. Dr. Charles Mwansambo is the health secretary. He said despite the slow uptake of the vaccine, the expiration was also because of the vaccine's short shelf life by the time the government received the donation. He said although the remaining doses are expected to expire in June and July, the government will see to it that the vaccines do not expire again.
We have a policy where we say first in, first out, first expiry, first out. So for those vaccines expiring end of June, they are the ones that we use first, and the ones in end of July, we will use them later. So we don't see this happening again.
He said to increase the vaccine uptake, the government has trained additional health workers to reach out to communities normally unable to access medical facilities that are providing vaccines. In addition, he said the government has increased the number of vaccination centers across the country. George Jobe is the executive director for the Malawi Health Equity Network. He says low vaccine uptake is more prevalent in rural areas where myths and misconceptions about COVID-19 are prevalent.
In the cities, we saw huge numbers, long numbers of people, queues to be vaccinated. But in the communities, we need to do more. Sensitization, responding and clarifying on the misconceptions.
Minister of Health Chiponda says Malawi is expected to receive about 900,000 additional doses of AstraZeneca vaccines under ECOVAX facility in June. Lamik Masina for VOA News, Lilongwe, Malawi.
Still on COVID issues, the Sudanese health minister says more than 200 Sudanese medical workers have died of COVID-19 this past year. Some health workers in Khartoum say they feel vulnerable and are calling for more protective measures against the virus in all health facilities. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Sudanese Health Minister Dr. Omar Al-Najib says since the beginning of the coronavirus cases in the country in March last year, more than 200 health workers have died from the disease, including 11 medical doctors. Speaking during a press conference in Khartoum last night, Najib said some health workers are reluctant to follow COVID-19 protective measures in and out of health facilities.
We lost more than 200 health workers. They were very important part of medical teams and friends. Majority of them contracted the disease outside health facilities. Some were deployed during examination periods in some universities, and this is the fact. I'm sure that these students have passed their exams and are living normally, but our colleagues lost their lives.
Najib says the government expects the number of confirmed cases to reach 100,000 by mid-June. He says health workers must protect themselves before attending to patients. Minister Al-Najib has ordered the directors of all health facilities to tighten protective procedures in all health facilities so that health workers do not contract COVID-19 or any other disease. He calls it a moral obligation. Fatima Ali Issa, a lab technician in a blood bank at a Saudi hospital in Khartoum, says she feels vulnerable to contracting the disease. Issa says there are not enough protective measures at the blood bank due to lack of medical supplies.
Sometimes the hospital runs off of face masks and sanitizers, and we work without them. And if a health worker gets sick, he or she gets no support. Normally they suffer and pay for the treatment alone or by the family.
Dr. Yasir Anur, director of Kassala State Hospital in Eastern Sudan, says even though they have not recorded any deaths among health workers in the state, administrators still feel the need to increase the hospital's protection level. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus via phone from Kassala town, Anur says, for the past 2 weeks, the hospital has run out of oxygen cylinders and worries that these might affect the patients if they record any new infections.
The new wave of this pandemic is terrifying. We don't have enough capacity to handle it. Even our health workers who work at isolation centers don't follow all protective measures. They don't have enough personal protective equipment or PPE. They only used face masks and gloves.
Dr. Muhammad Al-Hassan is the medical director at Munawara Private Hospital in Khartoum's Kalakla neighborhood. Dr. Al-Hassan says he lost two health workers to COVID-19 early this year. Since then, he says he increased the level of protection of health workers at the hospital.
We established an isolated room as a reception at the entrance of the hospital, and we checked all patients before allowing them access to the hospital facilities. And when we allow them in, we instruct them to wear a face mask all the time.
On Wednesday, the head of Sudan's high-level task force for COVID-19, Professor Sadiq Taur, ordered all schools, universities and places of worship to be shut down for a period of 1 month due to a recent spike on COVID-19 cases. Officials say they confirmed more than 1,000 COVID-related deaths in the past 2 weeks. Sudan has documented more than 300,000 positive cases since the outbreak of the pandemic. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Human Rights Watch says Sudan's transitional government should undertake security sector reforms and commit to justice and accountability. The New York-based watchdog group released a report Wednesday saying the Sudan Armed Forces used excessive and lethal force against protesters in Khartoum on May 11. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
Protesters who gathered on the 29th of Ramadan or May 11th to break their fast outside Sudan's military barracks in central Khartoum and commemorate the second year anniversary of pro-democracy protests in 2019 were met with excessive and lethal force, according to the new Human Rights Watch report. Sudan's health ministry confirmed that 2 people were killed and 37 others were injured during the military's attempt to disperse the gathering. The Central Committee of Sudan's doctors said 15 people had bullet injuries and others had been injured by beatings with batons and sticks. Mohamed Osman is a Sudanese Human Rights Watch researcher based in Berlin, Germany.
The situation has been a combination of use of excessive force, use of lethal force,
in apparent violation of Sudan's international obligation under international human rights law and serious violation to the freedom of assembly that has been stipulated upon under Sudan's transitional constitutional charter. What is there is definitely a situation that marks another episode of violence against protesters, and at the same time, in the way that this militarized response to crowd control.
Osman's team interviewed 9 people, including journalists and activists by phone, who either took part in the commemoration or watched as security forces fired live bullets at protesters. He tells South Sudan in Focus his findings highlight a systemic problem with Sudan security agencies.
The failure of security sector reform and needed institutional and legal reform. There have been a lot of calls to embark on these steps from different rights and protest groups in and outside the country. The situation, as we see now, that the government has failed to show the political willingness to embark on those necessary and important steps to secure free and peaceful exercise of fundamental freedoms.
On June 3, 2019, after the military removed President Omar al-Bashir in April, security forces violently dispersed thousands of protesters who continued to gather outside the military barracks demanding that the Transitional Military Council hand over power to a civilian-led government. Human Rights Watch estimates that 120 people were killed and hundreds more were injured during the bloody crackdown. The transitional government initiated an investigation into those events in September 2019, but the victims' families and other protest groups have told Human Rights Watch researchers the investigation has been slow and have questioned the investigators' independence. Osman says it is now more urgent than ever that Sudan's transitional government undertake steps to reform the country's security agencies as stipulated in the Juba Peace Agreement signed in October 2020.
There are different steps in which such process can take place. More importantly, given the context of Sudan, there is a need to start with legal reform in terms of abolishing immunity provisions that for a long time those abusive forces been shielded behind. We are talking about vetting of security forces members to exclude those implicated in abuses.
Osman says Sudan's transitional government should reach out to international partners for technical and financial assistance to complete the process. He's also calling on Sudan's partners to do more to prioritize the security sector reform in their engagement with Sudan's government. Immediately following May 11th crackdown on peaceful protesters, Sudan's Attorney General Tayasser al-Hibir launched an investigation and military commanders handed over the names of suspects implicated in the abuses. But Osman says much more must be done.
I think the crucial issue here is not investigating abuses after they happen. It's the steps that traditional authorities should take in order to prevent those abuses from happening. The fact that we see continuation of violations in a democratic transition that is very concerning. And at the same time, there have been multiple investigation efforts, including June 3rd, including cases of abuses by other security forces in the past.
Attorney General al-Hibir has since resigned from his position, citing interference with his office by what he called unauthorized institutions that compromise prosecutorial independence. Sudan's Chief Justice Naamat Abdullah Mohamed Khair was also fired from her post without explanation. Osman is urging authorities to ensure that the vacancies in those two key posts do not affect ongoing investigations. He is also calling on the government to expedite the process of appointing a number of commissions, including a Transitional Justice Commission and a Human Rights Commission as laid out in Sudan's constitutional charter. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
That's our show for this Thursday. Let us know what you think about this show. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We now leave you with the song Children of the Soil by the Rhymers. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your cars. Thanks for allowing us into your vehicles, homes, and phones. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
We are the children of the soil. I taught me fought like a team. We civilians get the support. No peace lives without water. Civilians are like a water body. A nation to develop, not a single passion, tribe, or region for paternity. We need to stop.